Next level at Dublin Deck in Patchogue. Buster Poindexter will be at the Cutting Room in New York City, 8 p.m. Looking ahead to Wednesday, June 12th, American Bombshells will be at the VA Medical Center in Northport, 6:30. Dropkick Murphys will be at the Paramount in Huntington Village, 8 p.m.
Tune in throughout the day, each day, to hear Concert Billboard on the air, or see it at the WUSB website at wusb.fm/CBB. It's a service of WUSB Stony Brook.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, where the time is just about 6:01 time once again for Off the Wall. Thank you. Wikipedia a wonderful thing, Kyle?
Yes, it is.
So we're just debating some things and looking it up on Wikipedia and proving who's right and who's wrong and how facts can be changed. Good evening. It's Off the Wall time. Emmanuel Goldstein here and Kyle over there.
Yes, I'm here. Am I not?
Yes. Well, you seem to be mostly in the left channel. Try talking again.
Well, I'd like to be center or mid.
You see that? You're in the left channel more than more than anything else. I'm in both channels.
Should I hit the microphone?
How you fix things around
I'll
here.
Hit it. Can I give it a good...
I wouldn't hit it that hard.
All right, well,
I mean, you're standing up. You're about to really deck the thing.
Oh.
Just tap it a little bit, you know, like you're disciplining a puppy. No, don't do that to puppies. No, that's too hard.
Good? Better?
Hang on. Let me cut the theme for a second. All right,
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hello.
You see what's happening here? Okay,
that's terrible.
Let me try. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. You see how
this
I do it?
Great.
Yeah, left and right. Now you try that.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
No, you're not doing it right.
You're only getting
the left channel, Kyle. Do it like I'm doing. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Left and right. Go ahead.
Testing 1, 2.
What, am I speaking Swahili or something? No, you're only getting the left channel, a little bit of the right channel.
I don't know how to throw. Do I have to throw my voice? Is that it?
Do I have to teach you how to speak in two channels? This is ridiculous.
All right.
You can just come over here and use this microphone if you have to. I mean,
No, I like this microphone.
Yeah, but it doesn't like you,
Maybe
apparently.
Maybe if I play with the connection?
Okay,
does that put horrible static noise
No,
out?
It doesn't. No more than usual.
Is there a balance? Yeah, balance up there? You got a big mixer there.
Yeah, but the mixer, you're saying for this one channel over here? No, that wouldn't pertain. It would have to be in the connection somewhere.
Well.
Or the microphone itself. Could be one of these leftist microphones.
Perhaps the university took the right channel.
Now, let's not blame the university for anything more. We blamed for everything last week. And this week the temperature is much better.
Yes.
So I guess that's what you have to do.
I'm impressed.
But as you can see, there are still some war casualties in the studio that we have to repair and console and things like that. Yeah, so had enough rain this week. This was a pretty interesting week for precipitation. We had a tropical storm roll through.
Yes, it's been a bit damp out.
Mm-hmm. They had a tropical storm. Andrea, was it? The first one of the year.
Andrea.
Yeah. It was Andrea. Like, there's a certain pronunciation. It's spelled the same way. But that dumped a whole lot of rain on us. And then yesterday we had more rain that was completely unrelated. And this afternoon, hey, what a good idea. Let's have another rainstorm. And I think we're getting rain tomorrow, too, or maybe Thursday.
It's pleasant.
What's pleasant are thunderstorms, and we don't have enough of those. And I'm hoping that we get some real heavy kinds that scare you. You know.
Well... I'm no stranger to the rain. The thunder is a bit different, but
Coming from Seattle, yes, you do have a lot of rain.
I was taken aback though that we didn't have louder thunder for some of the bolts and lightning flashes that I saw. It was sort of slow rumbles.
Yeah, yeah, not too many of them either. Well, we got so much mail last week when we were. Basically bitching the whole hour, all sorts of different things. But we got a lot of mail, but unfortunately I forgot to print any of it out and bring it here.
Nice.
Well, because we were late and I was flustered, but I promise I'll print it out and read it next week unless the same thing happens.
Real professional.
Yeah, I know it happens. We have other things to talk about, though, all sorts of things going on in the news.
We do appreciate when people write to
otw@2600.com. Sometimes it catches us by surprise and we don't know what to do, that's what happens. We were watching earlier what's going on in Istanbul in Turkey. CNN basically devoted their entire day to covering it, and it's been really riveting and fascinating.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, just and it reminds me so much of things that have happened in so many other places, things like the Occupy movement.
Yes.
And Zuccotti Park and all that. This taking place in Taksim Square in Istanbul. It started out as basically people objecting to a park being demolished and turned into something much, much bigger, and right now people are fighting the police. The thing is different, and we were noticing this before, people actually do fight back during these demonstrations. So you had police basically firing water cannons at people and lobbing tear gas at them and stun grenades, is that what they're called?
Yeah, stun grenades.
Not nice.
That's everything that the police have. as well as the, all of their shields and helmets.
Yeah.
But I really like that it's a fair fight.
Well, the demonstrators fight back. Yeah, they throw Molotov cocktails.
But that's so much better than a bunch of bloodshed.
Well, I mean, there is some bloodshed, but it's not firing live artillery in either direction, at least not yet.
Yeah.
And basically what happens is people drags on for quite some time. The demonstrators, after the police withdrew, and yes, they do withdraw sometimes, they were shooting off fireworks. So you saw this fireworks display. It took place right after the cops left.
Yes.
Then they started using the fireworks as sort of a weapon themselves, aiming at the cops, which was interesting.
Oh, I love the tools. Like, okay, fireworks, check. Respirator, check. Flares, check. Lasers. Saw some great use of lasers blinding the water truck, cannon truck drivers.
Yeah.
And people shooting tear gas were getting lased in the face with green lasers.
Well, that's not funny. No, pointing lasers in somebody's eye.
Well, they're not blue light lasers. At least they're green. But green lasers can be pretty dangerous, too.
Yeah. It's mayhem over there right now. No one knows how it's going to go. The leader of Turkey is promising to clamp down even more, saying that the demonstrations are illegal. It's fascinating to watch it all develop live in front of you. And of course, they know they're being broadcast. The government knows it's being broadcast. The demonstrators know it's being broadcast. It's got to affect what they do and how they act. And if they constrain themselves in any way, if they step it up in any way, it definitely affects their behavior.
I'm amazed that the reporters don't know the antidote for pepper spray. That was the one thing they kept saying. It's the protesters, they're coming around, they're so organized, they're spraying everybody if they get tear gas, and like there's this minty stuff, and it's like if you look up antidote to pepper spray, it's like Mylanta, it's antacid diluted in water.
So how many people know, why do you know that?
Because I looked it up.
That's the reason. Did you know it before you looked it up?
Well, I didn't look it up today. I looked it up a long time ago, and I know it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I looked it up, I think it was actually in the context of the battle in Seattle.
Way back
ago.
In 1999.
Well, yeah, I mean, I looked it up kind of researching that event and the use of tear gas and pepper spray, and through that sort of interest, I stumbled around and got to looking up what exactly the antidote is. And so, yeah, it's like Mylanta, you know, that's why it's minty.
I just fixed your microphone because it's...
No way.
It's a switch on the board, which is dirty.
Oh.
Yeah, because this board is in horrible shape, and I just touched it a little bit, and now... Try.
So just when everybody has switched to mono, they're listening with their little earpiece.
Now you're coming through on both channels. There was a little bit of static there while I was moving it, but you're fine.
Happy to be here in stereo.
Almost nobody touches anything at all.
Well, I feel equal now, I think.
Well, okay, you might feel equal, but... Well, let's just let the words speak for themselves.
Anyway, it's great to see this battle going on there.
Here's the thing that I'm curious about. You see people over there fighting the cops.
Yes.
And here is something that's inconceivable. I was saying before, if you even throw a stick in the direction of a cop, you're going to get shot at or something horrible will happen to you.
Zip-tied.
And it's a tough argument to make. Why would I advocate people being able to throw things at cops and get away with it? But the alternative to expressing anger occasionally when you're being pushed around and basically, suppressed, I guess.
Manhandled.
Yeah, and we've seen that happen time and time again. But the alternative is to accept that and to just cow under authority. And I think, you know, throwing a few things sometimes has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes me an anarchist. If so, I'll wear it proudly, but...
It's dissent.
It's dissent, and dissent is not always pretty.
Sometimes dissent requires direct action, and I think it's something we don't practice enough sometimes. And I think when you look at these countries, you say, wow, you know what? These people are fearless because they won't stand for it, and they'll ride the escalation right with it. And I don't know, something powerful in that. And I mean, it is a modern country, Turkey. I mean, they're using non-lethal weapons, and... So it's, you know, it's not really an even battle, I think, but at least there is a battle and people can hold their ground and it can cause a stir, and people who aren't willing to be out there and fight can perhaps make a little noise in the halls of government or wherever they see fit, but it doesn't go unnoticed mm-hmm. and just become a fringe group. It grows. It has support. People can join them and really get behind the crux of what that dissent is about. And I think it's just we're too easily dispersed here.
It all depends on how it's presented and what happens. If the groups are presented as people who are thugs, basically just smashing things and intimidating people, then it doesn't go well. Mm-hmm. And that's true almost anywhere. But if they're seen as being suppressed by the cops and marched over and attacked, then more and more people join that. Today, when we watched basically the crowds being chased out of the square, out of the park, a park they had been chased to already, then it was really insane seeing them being intimidated, sprayed, pepper sprayed, tear gassed, all that. But then after the police withdrew, and they did withdraw, they came back in bigger numbers than ever, and they were emboldened by this.
Swelled.
So oftentimes, this kind of attack, whether it's an attack on your liberties or an attack on you personally, and it's witnessed by an even bigger group of people, something like that can actually strengthen you and make you realize that, well, you know what, I must be onto something if they're this afraid of me, if they're this angry and really want to keep me down.
Yeah.
But getting back to the point of knowing what to do, knowing how to protect yourself, I wonder, and maybe this is a good thing, but kids in this country, do they know how to make Molotov cocktails? I don't think they do. You know, I know in other countries they do. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? We're keeping this knowledge out of adults probably don't know this either around here. We don't generally do things like that. We don't throw Molotov cocktails at the authorities or at buildings or things like that.
I could.
Well, yeah, we could. We all could. We all have this in us. We're all savages deep down underneath. Not that people throwing Molotov cocktails are savages. What I'm saying is that knowing when to stand up, when to act, this is what all the quote-unquote Second Amendment people are saying, that when the revolution comes, you got to be ready. Or you have to fight back against people who are attacking you. Well, you know, this happens. This happens every day in different ways. Not just people kicking in your door and storming into your house and attacking your family. That's the most simplistic example of that I can think of. But there are so many other ways that your freedoms are attacked. And people need to be prepared for those in various ways. And oftentimes that means standing up and being counted and putting your ass on the line and being subject to an attack by a force so much greater than you. But you have the advantage in that you have the numbers. And you have the sympathy of the world if the world is paying attention.
Yes.
And that's where things like knowing how to resist, how to throw a Molotov cocktail, how not to blow yourself up if you're going to do something like that, that comes in handy.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes it is justified. Oftentimes it is, as we see around the world. You can't just say, yeah, it's justified in Syria, it's justified in Turkey, it's justified in Greece and parts of Asia, but never here because we're so good. We've got it all together. And friends, that's just not so.
You know what struck me? Do we know that? What's the president's name? I'm just failing.
Barack Obama.
No, in Turkey.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought your mind was going. Okay, I know that. I know this because I have the article in front of me.
Well, he was speaking.
Erdogan, I believe.
Erdogan.
Or Erdogan, that's an R.
Erdogan.
Erdogan. I can't speak to the pronunciation, but Erdogan.
He was kind of speaking and just being very, had a bit of, like, swagger, a little bit reminiscent of Bush, talking about how, you know, these decisions, these things must be done, you know, through the voting process and this and that and the other thing. And it just struck me, like, watching him say that, it's like, well, guess what? The government is all of those people out there.
Mm-hmm.
You get that? I mean, that's democracy, guy. Like, it's fine for you to say, like, yeah, you know, we've got, you know, offices and different departments that you can submit forms and go here and go there and all
that.
Oh,
yeah, that always works.
It's like, he's so classic. I mean, mm-hmm. he could be any, like, Western leader, but at some point, you got to step out of your ivory towers. You got to go out and understand that on the street, where the people are, the attitudes are a little different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They don't care about your secretary in this office for this legislator who's going to accept this call or write you down that you came and said congressperson, blah, 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 whatever you care about. It's great. That's awesome. But sometimes it's not as immediate. It's not as direct. And it doesn't inspire other citizens. I mean, how many parties, how many times do you go and sit and talk about, well, I just got off the phone with my congressperson today. I mean, that's not exactly something you discuss, you know, maybe with friends at a little get-together. You know, you don't, it's not inspiring either. Oh, really? You sat at home and you know, complained, essentially, to some legislator or you know, oh, I'm voting. Well, you know, voting in and of itself in America can be a bit of a contentious thing amongst friends when you talk about it. But mm-hmm. if you're like, yeah, you know what, I was down at Occupy. I was, you know, in the federal plaza in Chicago before we invaded Iraq. You know, I was there, and I heard the drums, and I saw the people talk about what kind of storm they were going to start politically. That's a lot more inspiring, and that, you know, people feel that. It resonates. And, you know, so it's just hilarious to see this president kind of fall into this kind of newspeak and, you know, political thing of saying, well, we will not hand, you know, these hooligans, blah, blah, blah. They're not hooligans. They are you. They are the government.
Mm-hmm.
They put you there. They'll take you away.
Yes.
By hook or by crook.
This guy, he wants to be a Western leader. He obviously
right.
wants Turkey to be part of the EU. I think that's part of his platform as well. And doesn't look so good when people are put down this way. Not that any country in the EU is above this themselves, but it's certainly an embarrassment to see this kind of mayhem going on in the streets and to see the way the authorities have dealt with it. And it's historic times as far as seeing where this is going to go next. As you said, he is pointing to that whole thing that leaders point to, that these people are not part of the process, they're not part of the people, and they certainly are. Those are the people. They might not even be the majority of the people. They might be a strong minority. Who knows? But the fact is, when he says things like, this is not part of the electoral process, well, neither is tearing down a beloved park.
Yeah.
I don't think people voted for that. This is something that a government did that betrayed the interests of people that clearly didn't want something like that. And not listening to the people, unless it's election day, not listening to them when something like this is going on, that's a betrayal right there. And that needs to be looked at and addressed. And this isn't going away anytime soon. And if anything, it's going to spread. There have been protests and demonstrations in other parts of Turkey as well that have been put down pretty quickly and violently. So.
Leaders like this really need to understand the immediacy of direct action like that and actually understand that they could participate. They could stand up to some of these interests. It's not politically unfavorable to stick your neck out on an issue like that, especially if you see what people are willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
For you as a leader, that's noble. That's inspiring. You could actually harness the people and really have their ear. You don't have to just participate in these, like, sweetheart deals or whatever sort of day-to-day thing you just expect to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just sort of unimpressed with leaders like that. I think Obama started to talk a little bit about that with regards to some other issues that are going on. You know, it doesn't have to just be that you go along with everybody around you, your yes men, whatever, in the government. You can change your stance. You can get behind the people and say, you know what? They have a point. Let's do something different now.
It's rare that somebody will actually do that because they're around those people all the time, the people that are whispering in their ear and telling them what to do. And to basically stand up to them is more frightening than standing up to the vast majority of the people out there because you're isolated from them.
Or worried about your career.
Right, but it's a mistake that almost all leaders make, where they become isolated and they forget how powerful people actually are when they get together.
Yeah.
And which is why getting them together is discouraged in every single regime.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and if we only realized how powerful we could be if we ever got together, things would change quite a bit in whatever direction we decide they should go in. But we got to agree on things. We got to realize what's important, what's not important.
Mm.
And there might be some of that down the road. There mm-hmm. might be some of that. There have been some news developments in the past couple of days that certainly have brought a lot of people from different camps together.
Really?
And yeah, absolutely. People don't want to be spied upon. They don't want to have their emails read and their phone calls tracked or tapped or what have you.
What?
So it's something, yeah. It's a lesson we all have to learn. And we're going to talk more about that on tomorrow's show.
Absolutely,
Off the Hook.
There's a lot to talk about with regards to the...
Don't want to do the same show twice, but we are aware, and we're certainly in the midst of it and talking to people and things like that. So tune in tomorrow for that particular discussion. Unless people want to call in today and talk about it, too, we'll
wrap
up
with
that.
No, we'd love to talk to the listeners. It was really cool to talk to people last week and stuff. So.
And we're going to open the phones up in just a little bit. And if we can get them put back together again, we'll take some phone calls.
Absolutely.
All right. But as far as the political process here in this country, well... a state appeals court is considering whether to allow New York City to ban oversized sodas and other large sugary drinks at city restaurants as part of its war on diabetes and obesity. Now, there are people apparently who are in favor of diabetes and obesity because they say that this is unconstitutional and infuriating, and they're really taking to the streets. And this is these are our battles, okay? In this country, this is what we care about. Oversized, the right for us to drink oversized sodas... I guess without getting up to get another one, because no one has said you can't get two medium-sized sodas to feed your diabetes habit, but they're saying you can't get, like, you know, a six-gallon cup of whatever in one sitting, and people say, that's my right. Thomas Jefferson fought for that and whatnot. Anyway, the city's Board of Health enacted a rule last year that would put a 16-ounce limit on sweetened beverages at all city-licensed eateries. Excuse me. The regulation would apply to thousands of fast food joints, fine restaurants, and sports stadiums. What's a fine restaurant? They say that like it's a thing.
Fine dining.
You know, I hear that phrase.
Place with a bar.
The places that don't let me in. That's what that is. Fine.
It's a white tablecloth. And,
that's fine. That makes it fine.
Yeah, like metal cutlery, perhaps glassware.
I usually get metal cutlery wherever I go. They don't make me have the plastic unless I'm on a plane or something. But, okay, I mean, it's a comparative way of speaking, fine, as opposed to okay, you know?
Well, just, fine as in, like, fine-tuning, fine...
that's not how they mean it, though.
Fine art.
They're saying it's... Okay, you know what? This is another discussion. But anyway, regulation applies to thousands of fast food joints, fine restaurants, and sports stadiums, but not to grocery stores. Now, this is what's interesting, and this does kind of tee me off a little bit. I'm in favor of the ban because... It's a stupid thing. it's just like I'm in favor of banning smoking in many places, banning smoking as far as when kids are around, any place where the environment can be polluted, where your personal environment can be polluted. I'm not in favor. This campus has gone overboard, by the way. They've banned all tobacco products on the entire campus. That's ridiculous. And there are always going to be people who push it a little too far. It means I can't walk across campus chewing tobacco anywhere. I'm going to be... tackled and arrested if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's, you know, even smoking a cigarette outside, it's a disgusting habit, but, you know, I do believe in disgusting habits. They, you know, people should be able to pursue them if they want, but just not at the expense of other people's air supplies and things like that. So I do support banning things inside. I support not advertising to kids and not advertising on public airwaves and things like that. People do have the right to choose things. So, yeah, people push things a little too far sometimes doesn't mean the idea is wrong.
Yeah,
so
if you can't safely operate a barbecue in that area, then you probably shouldn't be able to smoke there. But, you know, if it's outside and a well-ventilated area, then, I don't know, it's away from entrances and air intake ducts or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but.
Well, okay, so they have this thing going on in the city where this does not apply to grocery stores. Now, guess what is considered a grocery store and thus is not privy to this particular ban on massive sweetened beverage containers?
7-Eleven.
7-Eleven. How about that? And 7-Elevens are popping up all over New York City, displacing the many bodegas there because they have artificially low prices. And this is not capitalism at work. This is basically unfair business practices driving local businesses out and putting something faceless and corporate in its place. And there's a no 7-Eleven movement. I would suggest people get part of this, you know, throughout the country, but mostly in New York City right now. There's a big anti 7-Eleven movement because they're just popping up everywhere. And it's because of things like this. They get around the rules. And so all the people will, you know, that have convinced themselves that they want massive sodas are going to go there. and buy everything else at artificially low prices, while meanwhile regular business owners aren't able to compete.
Now, the prices are not the only things in 7-Eleven that are artificial. Mm-hmm. And I would say, like, the bodegas. You mean the bodegas with enormous fruit stands
and flowers
and fresh
outside,
fruit
yeah.
and flowers.
People from the neighborhood that that own the place and that basically pour their life into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they get things from a distributor for a certain amount of money. Obviously, they have to sell it for more than what they pay for it. 7-Eleven, however, since they get such massive amounts, they're able to get it for less, and they're able to sell it for less than the other people buy it from the distributors for. So, obviously, they can't compete. They'll just simply go out of business, and that is the plan. The plan is to open them all over the place and then just keep weeding them out, and then you close a couple, and then you have basically a complete corner on the market.
Yeah, what I was going to say is that it's that idea of, like, overwhelming the area, saturating it with 7-Elevens. Like, they pit 7-Elevens against other 7-Elevens because they're franchises. I think we were talking to someone in a 7-Eleven.
That's that right, yes.
There was another 7-Eleven up the road, and he said, you know, we're under new management.
Well,
but
let me just explain the situation. On Route 347, which is right around here, basically, there used to be an Exxon and a Mobil gas station across the street from each other, and then Exxon and Mobil merged, and then both of those stations closed, and you had vacant buildings, and one of them became a 7-Eleven, one of them became a Chase Bank. Now, there was a Chase Bank right down the road, and I just realized they closed. They closed that one, and they put the other Chase there. Fine. The 7-Eleven that opened, though, was also down the road from another 7-Eleven, like one block away on Route 347, maybe three-quarters of a mile. And that 7-Eleven is still there. And we went to that 7-Eleven, the old one, and asked them, so are you moving to this other 7-Eleven, or what's the deal? And no, basically they had no say in it. 7-Eleven just simply gave another franchise out, three-quarters of a mile away. It's killing this business, and they're screwed. They have no say. And that is how they operate. They'll basically just put somebody else close to you, drive you out of business, but their name survives. They get stronger. And like you were saying, this place, they're opening under new management. Even though they've been there for many years, they're trying to get attention by saying, yes, we're now reopening, and we're the new 7-Eleven, and it's not working.
Yeah.
At least I don't think it's working.
To speak nothing of the fact that there's nothing very useful to get from a 7-Eleven. Their beer selection's terrible. I don't even know what mm-hmm. we were getting, but it's pretty awful.
Yeah, and
compared to what you got in the city. You know.
But there are real people that buy into this, that buy franchises, and they're hurt just as much when it doesn't work out. So, yeah, while 7-Eleven will drive local businesses out, they will suck local people in to pour their heart into keeping that 7-Eleven open and then just spit them out just like they did the local businesses. So that's why you can't support things like this, especially when it's up against local businesses that are really facing hard times as it is. So, yeah, no 7-Eleven, I think, is the – I'm going to look it up so that we have something to tell folks to join and to strengthen. This is a thing, especially in New York, because New York is notoriously non-franchise-ish, especially in the city. Lots of local businesses, lots of things that you only see in the streets of New York, and it's just really sad to see things that you're familiar with being replaced by that very familiar
homogenized.
Logo. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, they're immune from the just as an example, they're immune from the big soda selling. It doesn't mean that I want people to sell big sodas, you know, 64-ounce containers or whatever. But it just shows how they have an unfair advantage because they're so big, and they're going to use that and hurt local businesses as a result. Do you have any 7-Elevens in Seattle?
Yeah, there's a ton of them.
Are there more than ever before?
I have noticed them opening up a bit, much in the same way as we started to notice out here. So I think it's an equal sort of front or kind of trend towards more locations until they decide which ones are actually the most effective, you know, run their statistics and stuff. But yeah,
I found the organization is called No 7-Eleven. It's spelled N-O-7-E-L-E-V-E-N, and they have a Facebook page with that name. And I think there's a Twitter account as well that has the same name, but they have links and all that. So join them and make them strong and keep local businesses alive.
Yeah. And drink something healthy like water or something.
Yeah, water's good. You got some water right there.
Yeah, it's pretty tasty. It's fresh and it's local and more or less free.
What else is happening in this country? Okay, we don't have people throwing Molotov cocktails and running around the streets, not yet anyway. But we do have an upstate New York student who got a 3-day suspension for creating a controversial Twitter hashtag encouraging discussion of the school district's failed budget. Yes, this is what we have. Pat Brown, a senior at Cicero North Syracuse High School, says he created... okay, we can't say this word.
Should I guess?
Well, no, it's a four-letter word beginning with S.
Okay.
But then, I'm trying to figure out, CNS is the name of the school district, Cicero North Syracuse. So, S followed by three letters, CNS should cut. Okay, so let's just say stuff CNS should cut.
Perfect.
That was the
Perfect.
Hashtag.
Yeah.
And basically he created that to brainstorm ways his school could save money in response to voters rejecting a $144.7 million budget plan. The budget did not receive the 60% voter approval it needed. Now, many students were concerned, he said, because the school board had warned that if a new budget was not eventually passed, they might have to eliminate athletic programs, other extracurricular activities, and introduce additional administrative cuts, including the elimination of some teacher positions. Now, the budget will be revoted on June 18th. Now, according to the CNN story, Brown said, everyone on Twitter was talking about, I can't believe the budget didn't pass, and so I created the hashtag as a joke, really. Now, at first, his ideas for cutting the school budget were meant to be funny and absurd. They included cutting the lights because if teachers weren't being paid, students would have no schoolwork they'd have to see. Okay, makes sense to me, actually. He also suggested holding classes outside to save on air conditioning costs.
Actually, I think that's very good.
That's a very good idea. These are good ideas.
Why not go outside?
Yeah. Now, students at the school joined in on Twitter using the hashtag with their own cost-cutting ideas. Anime club, said Jack the Juice Man. cheerleading, said Jamie Runge. There's honestly not much left at this point, wrote Michael Brisson. Now, Brown says the tweet that got him in trouble was a call for the termination of the school's executive principal. Mm-hmm.
Termination as in...
I don't think...
Firing.
Yeah, yeah. I said we should cut her because... I don't think he meant it that way either.
Okay.
I said we should cut her because I don't think she does a good job. But that's just my opinion I was sharing on Twitter. Now, according to Brown, on Thursday he was called into the office and told he would be suspended for 3 days for harassing the principal, using a mobile phone in class, and disrupting the learning environment. Now, North Syracuse Central School District Superintendent Dr. Kim Dice Fawcett said she was aware of the situation but could not comment on disciplinary matters related to specific pupils. We have a student code of conduct that is a policy we abide by. Students and parents know the expectations of this policy, and whenever a situation arises where a student does not meet those expectations, we deal with it accordingly, and in the worst possible way, apparently. Now, Brown is an executive board member for his class on the student council and a community volunteer. He says he has never been in trouble with the school before. He admits to using his phone in class. He said his teacher never addressed it at the time, and he never threatened anyone. I'm not a bad student, he said. CNS says they want student involvement in what goes on in our school, and next thing I know, I'm in trouble. A 45-year-old man can speak his opinions about the school district, but I can't because I'm a student. I just want the school board to remove the suspension from my record and choose their battles better.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, his original tweets have since been deleted. I'm not sure by whom. He said he will be allowed to graduate and take part in graduation ceremonies with his class, but he said he still feels like his reputation has been tarnished. I really don't plan on filing any appeal or anything. I really just wanted my opinion out there. They seem to have all the power, so I went and got more power with social media. And by last Friday, a new hashtag had emerged, Free Pat Brown.
Nice.
So, this is an example of kids having courage to stand up to authority and speak their mind and paying the price for it.
Yeah.
It goes to show how afraid authorities are of this.
I don't think he was really impeding very much learning. If anything, he was a catalyst for some serious learning on all parts, mm-hmm. or, you know, by all parties.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this goes across all the political spectrums. There's a kid wearing a pro-NRA shirt who was thrown out of school, told he had to change, and he refused to, rightfully so, because... speech is speech, whether you agree with it or not, whatever side It supports, and we all have to be there when that happens. We can't look at our own views and say, well, you know, I don't agree with this person, so I won't support their right to free speech. No, you have to support everyone's right, or it means nothing.
Hmm.
All right. You know, I don't want to run out of time, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into delay.
Okay.
And if anyone wants to call us, our phone number is 631-632-6901. 631-632-6901. And, of course, if you're calling from outside the country, feel free to prepend that with a 1 and whatever else is needed to make an international phone call from your particular part of the globe. Again, 631-632-6901. Let's listen to this wonderful ID.
Hey, this is James from the Polyphonic Spree, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, the station that sends you sunshine.
And we're back with what hopefully will be a few people calling in. Kyle, did you make it into delay land?
Am I here?
Good, good. Look at that. We're getting phone calls.
Yeah.
I think when we bitched out the entire world last week, we got a lot more people that want to hear us do that again. let's see who's out there. Good evening. You are on Off the Wall.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Speak up.
Hey, how are you? First of all, I just want to thank you and appreciate what you're doing here. I really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate our listeners. Thank you.
But I wanted to bring up a study in particular. I forget who did it. It was done in Europe. NPR mentioned it probably about 2 months ago. It was in regards to DNA and storing information. And essentially what they did was they took DNA, they took information, an MP3 song, took some data from a library, I forget what format it was in, and then they proceeded to encrypt it in AGCT, DNA format, rather, and they sent it off and decrypted it. And they played the music, they saw all the images and the files they put on it, and I just wanted to know what you guys think about that. And I know there's some serious implications with that, but I was wondering if you guys wanted to touch upon it and see, you know, what your thoughts are on that.
That's pretty clever. So did they use the DNA as a key, and was it an individual's DNA?
It's from my understanding, they made a gene, rather, or of some sort.
Right.
They fit in it. That's from my understanding. However, I'm not too familiar with it. I don't know entirely.
So the gene itself was the key for encrypting whatever kind of data they wanted to throw into it?
The chemical composition of DNA, the four letters that are used to encrypt coding, they base the encryption off of those four letters.
Sure.
And then the algorithm that they use, they decrypted it with the algorithm that they had put in.
Oh, okay, so they used an existing encryption algorithm, but they used the four letters as the kind of data that it would be encapsulated in. I think I understand what you're saying.
Yes, they basically took, they made a set algorithm, a set math pattern for AGCT, and then from that pattern that they took, they built the coding to transfer it over into that format so
sure.
they can decrypt it.
Right.
Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. So it would have just looked like those four letters in all kinds of different orientations to anybody who would be intercepting it, and then they were able to decipher it. I think that's brilliant. It's kind of a neat
exactly.
way to play with it. And more people should be comfortable with encryption and, I don't know, try different things like that and really teach the principles. I mean, just by doing little hacks, like little clever things like that, it works, and it's like it just adds different types of patterns into the broad swath of data that is captured, and that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about tomorrow, but that's what's going on, is that basically everything is getting captured and stored, or at least people are starting to see that as a direction for things, and, you know, one type of pattern versus the other is going to start to be able to be recognized, and so if you come up with different encryption schemes like that, that are based on simple rules like that, the more variety, the better. So it's pretty cool to hear about. I didn't know anything about it before your call.
It is cool, but it's also really scary at the same time, because then you have, you know, these, you know, them wanting mandatory DNA swabs and so forth. I mean, in all honesty, it's honestly a great idea in a perfect world, but in this day and age, in the world we live in, it's a really a scary thought, because, you know, oh God, God knows what information can and can't be put on any individual. You could be a walking, you know, you could literally a walking hard drive, rather, and God knows what information is on you. You don't know, and it's the ramifications of it are just entirely insane, and it's just it's really mind-boggling. It really is.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll have to look into it a little bit more to wrap my head around it. But it sounds like what you're saying is that like this gene they developed would then be like implanted or given to you, and then you would be like the transport method. But I'll also look more into it. Thanks a lot, though. That's a really cool story.
I advise everybody to check it out. I don't exactly know the actual report, but definitely look into it. It's NPR had an article about it probably about 2 months ago, so I don't remember the exact time frame. But
all right, listen, thanks for your phone call, and keep listening.
All right, have a good one.
All right, take care. Let's go on to the next one. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good evening to you.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you. I think I know about those two 7-Elevens you were talking about. They're one across you from the Hess station, next to that carpet or tile place, whatever it is.
Yeah, and then the other one is down the road a little to the east, I think.
Yeah, on the corner, it's like a mini 7-Eleven or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I used to go into the one that was further west, just, you know, for no reason. I just used to go into that one.
Uh-huh.
One day, one of the proprietors who run the place, I guess, whatever you want to call them, she said, oh, today's my last day because, you know, new owners, et cetera, et cetera. Just be a bald guy, just run the place. And I didn't think anything of it, and I didn't put two and two together until I realized the other 7-Eleven, the easternmost one, was opening up. And I'll tell you something. The other 7-Eleven, the one closest, you know, the west one, always had a lot of people in the parking lot, you know?
And
lately, it just doesn't seem like there's anybody ever in there.
Well, that's the effect of opening up two of the same thing really, really close to each other.
Right, but why would somebody go into 7-Eleven A and not 7-Eleven B?
Well, maybe the bald man scared them. I don't know. There's all kinds of reasons.
They have more LEDs at the new one.
Yeah, they do. It does jump out. But, you know, if you're going so fast down the Wisconsin Highway and you say, oh, my God, there was a 7-Eleven, I just missed it, you don't have to worry because before you can finish the sentence, there'll be another one.
Yeah, that's actually very true.
But what's bad about that is that there's no room for anyone else to run a business. You don't see small stores that sell groceries. You only see big chains in suburbia. And the reason for that is they can't compete.
I used to work in the city back in the day, and I remember there was one 7-Eleven in the entire Manhattan. I think it was up in the 80s someplace on the east side, I think.
Uh-huh.
That was the only 7-Eleven that I've ever run into. Now you're telling me that there's more of them in there? I haven't been in a little while.
Here's the one. There is one in particular that is drawing the ire of the East Village, and that is on the corner of, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's Avenue A and 11th Street.
Oh, way over there. Okay.
Yeah, and the thing about the East Village is when you go into Alphabet City, Avenue A, B, C, and D, there are no chains. There's no Starbucks. There's no McDonald's. There's no Burger King. Yeah, you might find a bank that's part of a chain, and I think there's a Duane Reade, but that's sort of a New York City chain. But there are none of these national chains that you see every place else. And that's kind of, you know, it wasn't really an intentional thing, but it's sort of something that the East Village has latched onto. And now, all of a sudden, these guys are saying, yeah, you know, even though there are three bodegas in sight, we're going to stick a 7-Eleven here and completely change the way the neighborhood looks and feels. And it's just not being met with a lot of support. And, in fact, they keep postponing when they're going to be opening this. It was supposed to open, I think, in June. Now they're saying not till October. And, you know, there's not that much work they have to do to make it into a 7-Eleven to start with. It doesn't take that much. But, obviously, the opposition has something to do with it. In fact, there's a BBC report that came out a few months ago that was aired internationally that focused on this one particular battle against this one particular 7-Eleven. And I thought that was incredible that literally the world could see this little battle of ours. It might not be Istanbul, but it's something where people stand up to just power of a corporate nature.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow. Ye old 7-Eleven opens up in the East Village then?
Yeah, well, I don't know. We'll see. There's another one on Grand Street that they want to open too, which I, You know, Kyle and I were just walking past this. We didn't even know about it. We just walked past it, and there's a sign saying 7-Eleven coming. We just heard local people bemoaning that, saying, oh, my God, really, why are they putting that here? All you have to do is stand next to one, and you'll see that the community is not in favor of it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you for your call.
All right, not a problem. I'll talk to you guys again.
Take care. You know, also, I want to bring something else. I've talked about this before because we had a bank robbery a year or so ago, and I mentioned it then. But Chase Bank, they're popping up everywhere, too. In fact, banks are popping up all over the place. I don't understand it. Maybe somebody could explain it to me. All these businesses are going under and being replaced by banks. Now, I am not an economist. I don't profess to be one. But it seems to me that if people don't have a lot of money and we're in an economic slump, the need for more banks isn't that apparent. I just don't get why we need to have TD Bank every couple of miles or a new Chase within sight of another one. It is so crazy, and I have yet to really investigate this or find out why. But in Setauket, which is the next town over from Stony Brook, there is a Chase Bank next door to a Chase Bank. Now, it's not the same building. It's two different buildings. In fact, try this. Go to chase.com. And type in zip code 11733, which is Setauket. And you will see, as I believe selection 1 and 2, that these two are right next to each other. But you won't see 1 and 2. You'll only see 1 because 2 is directly underneath 1. And, you know, for a long time, I thought that they weren't listing both of them. But since they're right at the same location, you can't see them both. You have to get rid of one in order to see the other. I cannot imagine. I've been inside both of them, and I guess I should just ask them, but I don't want to make them uncomfortable. But I cannot imagine why you would need the exact same thing next door to the exact same thing. True, one is in a shopping center and one is on the street, but the buildings are next door to each other. Makes no sense, but this is the corporate world.
And quantitative easing.
I'm sorry, I didn't turn your microphone. Sorry, go ahead.
I think the term you're looking for is quantitative easing, and what that means is there's a lot of money, so I don't think it's the people that need the banks. I think the banks need the banks because they have all this money that the government keeps giving them.
All this money?
I'm being a bit facetious. But
are you, or are you being realistic?
Well, I don't know anymore.
I can't tell the difference.
Oh, Lord.
We only have a couple of minutes left. Yeah, I do want to focus on this story, though, because the four-year-olds are on the attack again, apparently. And where else but Arizona? A four-year-old who was visiting Prescott Valley with his dad grabbed a loaded handgun from a television stand, asked what it was, and pulled the trigger, killing his dad in what police say was a tragic accident. What I say is another example of idiocy in guns. Justin Thomas, 34 years old, had traveled from Phoenix to a friend's home on Friday to pick up some of his things from a duplex where he had lived until earlier this year. The kid quickly found a .380 caliber semi-automatic handgun just lying around, apparently, showed it to his dad, and fired it. Basically, he asked his dad, what's this? And then the shot rang out, and that was the end of that guy. Now, yeah, you know, supposedly the guy didn't know that these people were visiting him. He got a text message saying, hey, I'm coming over to visit from the dad. And didn't see the text message until after all this had happened. So he didn't know that these people were coming over, opened the door, and they came in, and this horrible tragedy happened. But it speaks to how irresponsible people are in general. Yeah, you don't know when someone's going to stop by for a surprise visit. You don't know when a kid's going to be around. You never, ever leave weapons of that magnitude just lying around in a loaded condition. But the people that support this kind of a thing would say, well, how are they useful then? If they're not lying around where you can fire them at a moment's notice, how are they useful? How can you defend yourself? You know, our peaceful society, the world that we live in, where we have people dropping by with their four-year-old kids, is not compatible with the world these people profess to live in. The world where at any moment they will be attacked by God knows what and they have to have large capacity magazines to fight back. Two worlds are not compatible. We see this week after week. We see horrible tragedies that could be so easily avoided, and nobody knows who to blame. We need to all blame ourselves for accepting this and for saying that this is the world we live in. It's the world we live in because it's the world we make. We don't have to do that. All right, you know what? I talked myself into the end of the show. I turned myself down. I said, I wonder why I didn't finish that sentence. I said I talked myself to the end of the show, and I'm going to talk myself out of delay now. But here we are. We're back in live land.
Yeah.
And we're out of time. So, Kyle, thank you very much for your insight. And interesting times ahead. Interesting show tomorrow that we're going to be doing on the whole PRISM controversy, which has just hit. We'll have a lot to say about that. And you can write to us, otw@2600.com.
Mr. Kirk, Dexter's in school.
I'm afraid he's not, Miss Fishmore. Dexter's truancy problem is way out of hand. The Baltimore County School Board have decided to expel Dexter from the entire public school system.
Oh, Mr. Kirk, I'm as upset as you to know Dexter's truancy. But surely expulsion is not the answer.
I'm afraid expulsion is the only answer. It's the opinion of the entire staff that Dexter is criminally insane.
And have a good night. We will be back next week. OTW at 2600.com. Good night.
That boy needs therapy.
Psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
You're psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Lying down on the couch.
What does that mean?
You're a nut. You're crazy in the coconut.
What does that mean?
That boy needs therapy.
I'm gonna kill you.
That boy needs therapy.
Pranikazoo, let's have a cheese. I want to count three.
That red. Boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheep.
And he also made false teeth.
Avalanche is above. Business continues below.
Did I ever tell you the story about
cowboys?
A girl?
Yeah.